Hi, and welcome back to Forest of the Future. I am very excited about the conversation today because it brings together two of my favorite topics these days, AI and forestry. Innovation in forestry doesn't only happen inside the forest. It also happens in code, in data, and in the way that we structure knowledge and decision-making. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is moving very fast, and forestry is no exception to where it can be used. At UPM, they have an AI-powered assistant called ArnieBot, which is being developed to support forest-related questions and internal processes. But what does that actually mean? How do you build an AI agent for something as complex and nuanced as forestry? And how do you make sure that it remains reliable, transparent, and aligned with responsible forest management? That is the conversation today. And to guide us through this new digital frontier, I am joined by Jonas Palonen from UPM. He is the AI architect at the UPM AI Center of Excellence, and he helped build ArnieBot. So let's ask Jonas to start from the beginning.
ArnieBot, it's a UPM Forest internal retrieval bot. And it was meant to ease the UPM users to find information for their daily work. So we have a couple of systems, but tons and tons of information. I think you know the problem. And the users were complaining that it's difficult to find the information, it's cluttered, and there's just too much of it. So when the AI boom started happening and these technologies emerged, it was kind of apparent that, okay, we need some kind of an AI bot to help our users. So that was the kind of initial need that we started to solve, and it's maybe the need that majority of the companies are having.
And it sounds like that has evolved a bit over time. Who's the primary users now?
So still the primary users are UPM forest workers, so forest customer responsibles, land use planners, forestry planners, customer service. And then we have this thing called UPM Metsä Helpi. So it's this kind of internal service center where all of the workers from UPM Forest can call in and, hey, how do I do this process? Or which instructions do I follow? So ArnieBot is sort of kind of the technology responsible for that Metsä Helpi people. So we have an AI to help those people.
Can you give us a very like tangible, concrete example? If I'm a forest worker in the forest, how would I use the bot? What do I do? Is it an app? Is it a website? What do I do? What do I ask it?
So yeah, it's a website, and it's also published in Teams. So it's integrated right into our Teams. So you just go in there and ask your question. So if you're working on some creating a new offer, for example, for a forest owner, or you are planning how to do some felling, for example, and you just can't remember how something works, or you need to follow a specific process, etc., and you can't be bothered to find it. So you can ask, hey, can you give me instructions to do this? Or what's the process of doing that? And then, of course, that's just the work instructions. But then you can also do things such as, I am supposed to go to work on this stand and it has this small stream. Could it be something that I need to worry about? So what are the instructions on working around these kind of streams, etc.? So especially things that are considered in the FSC certificate, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I was the forest worker, it could actually help me identify where do I need to take special care?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So one of the things that we know, or at least is one of the things that is the pre-assumption or the judgment about AI is that you really need to be good to prompt, because if you're not good at prompting, then you don't get the result that you're looking for. When you then ask ArnieBot, for example, with the example you just gave, what do I need to be mindful of? How does it identify the intent behind the question in order to be able to give a good reply?
So if I start from the user's perspective, so of course, ArnieBot always provides the source that it has used to formulate an answer. So all the answers are based on our internal knowledge, internal documentations, work instructions, etc. So, of course, the user needs to be mindful that they check what anybody is saying to them and not just rely on it blindly. But then as users are humans and humans make errors and they make typos. So first, anybody, of course, goes through the user question. It checks it for any apparent typos, etc., and tries to clean what the user has sent in. And usually, if we trust the human and say that, okay, this is now no typos, this is clean text. What anybody does next, it's trying to clarify the intent a bit. And that is done by doing this query expansion. So the AI rewrites the same question in a couple of different ways. For example, it can add certain keywords or kind of just rewrite the question as a whole and then kind of see what are the retrieval results and are they good results for this question. And then average out across those results so that it can be a bit more certain that if this user is asking about this particular forest type, for example, can there be some overlapping? Can I be confusing this at the time for another type, etc.? And if all the results are giving the same kind of signals that, hey, I'm confident that this is the context that the user is asking about, of course, then good, and we can proceed. But if there are some mixed signals, there can be signs of overlap or confusion of the context, or are we mixing now process A and process B? So then Arnibot might ask a clarifying question, hey, do you mean this? Or are you talking about process A?
Do you guide users in how to best prompt? Do you train them before you give them access to the bot and say, this is how you might ask in a good way? Or they just send in to experiment?
Yeah, they do have access. But of course, we've seen that a lot of the users treat these AI systems still as Google or just keyword search. So they type in FSC and expect that the AI just reads their thoughts and can magically provide the right exact detail that they're thinking about the FSC certificate. And that's not the case. So of course, you need to be very specific in your question and kind of give that kind of a question that can be acted upon. And that the AI can then provide you information or instructions that you can then act up on. So, of course, if you're just looking for information, it can be just like, tell me about this, and that's fine. But if you're looking for instructions, you need help with your work or how to follow some process, then you need to specify that.
Mm-hmm. Will it prompt back then? I mean, if you just type in FSC, will it prompt back? I have a lot of information on FSC. What are you looking for more specifically?
So it will tell a kind of general description, what is FSC? And then it will ask, hey, would you like to know more about this or that? Or are you doing this sort of task related to FSC that you would want to know more of?
Mm-hmm. Does it do more than just text? Can you do multimodal? Could you take a picture in the forest and there's a stream and there are trees and then say, what am I supposed to do here in an FSC certified forest? Or is it just a text thing?
Right now, it is just a text. We are working on voice input, so to say that if you are in the forest and it's cold, so you might not want to take your gloves off to type on your phone. So it would be nice to just be able to talk. But yeah, that's still a bit under construction, but coming. We do have some other bots that are able to process images, diagrams, other attachments, but that's not included in Arnibot yet. And the case that you mentioned, hey, can you see this stream? How should I work here? That's the end game and would be really nice to have something like that. But we're not there yet.
Well, I don't think anybody's there yet, really. But
yeah.
I'm just curious of how far along you are in that process. But voice recognition or voice functionality also seems really, really good. Does it do location-based so it can tell whether or not you're in a certified forest or not? If you're in the forest?
That's not included right now. And again, it would be a nice feature, but then as it is not certain if I'm now sitting here and chatting about that one forest 100 kilometers over there, that could get mixed. And then I'm in one forest, I could be talking about another forest, etc. So we haven't implemented anything like that or even considered anything like that at the moment.
Okay, well, that makes sense. You could easily be asking questions for the next forest you're going to once you're done in that area that you're already in. I'm quite curious as to what it is that it's built on. You mentioned internal systems, etc. What kind of data sources are you building this on? Is it only internal procedures, or is it also pulling in like the official FSC standard, the advice notes that FSC gives out on how to interpret the standard or implement the standard, and other types of documentation? What does it pull from?
So currently, it is only internal systems. So we have this internal information management system, the one that the users kept complaining about, that it's hard to find information and there is too much of it. That tool, it has very nice governance features. Every piece of data is owned by someone and maintained, but there is just too much of it. So that's the kind of main data source that it is drawing from. But it does include, like you said, the FSC certificate and some instructions how to interpret it, both by FSC and by UPM. So it's all already process documentation. Then there are internal process documentations, work instructions, how to work on a specific sites, for example, and if we do B2B or for customers, etc., then how to work with customers. So all sorts of information.
And if I just take a step back and imagine a world before ArnieBot, where would I normally have found all of that information if I was a UPM employee?
So either you would have gone to that system by your browser and searched and tried to search, or then you can text or call or email the Metsä Helpi internal service team and, hey, I need help with this. And then they are just better at using the same system and find the information and provide it for you.
Okay. So it's actually also a very big reliever of their amount of work?
That's one of the driving forces of ArnieBot, that it could take over some of their workload, maybe the easier cases, where to find the information, etc. And then they could then focus their efforts on the complex cases where it might be that you need to actually talk with forest owners, etc., and solving these more complex cases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's really interesting. Do you do any external data sets as well in there, or is it only internal stuff? Is there anything else that comes from the outside that you use as well?
Yeah. So right now it is just internal and what we have gathered from outside to our internal systems. But we are working with Tapio. They are a Finnish company providing kind of forestry information and how to manage forests. And they have this API and their own systems that they provide free information. And we are now looking into integrating that as a data source. So, of course, that's the same data that we have already collected from them manually and use in our daily work. But now we just want to do it programmatically.
Uh-huh. So what would that typically be? Which kind of data do they provide?
So yes, so Tapio provides information in forest management instructions. They have good kind of vocabulary. They explain a lot about forest management, etc. So they're just leaders in providing the kind of Finnish forestry management data.
Mm. Is the tool actually only available in Finnish, or do you do it in multiple languages?
Yeah, ArnieBot is built on Finnish data and mainly used in Finnish, but these LLMs, they do work in across variety of languages. So we do have some users that use it in Swedish, and then technically you can use it in English, Chinese, Spanish, German. The LLM doesn't really care, but of course there is the kind of quality and the kind of misinterpretation. Some of these forestry terms can get very specific and it can be hard to know exactly what it means in English.
Yeah, I would love to see an automatic translation from Finnish in a very specific forestry-related term into Chinese, for example. I could imagine things going wrong
there. Yeah.
And actually, that's one of my next questions is, how do you make sure that it doesn't drift, that it doesn't do hallucinations, that it doesn't pull information from sources where you don't want it to be pulling from?
Yeah.
And if I may still say a bit about the external data sources mm-hmm. and the
of course,
Tapio, for example, as a provider. So of course, that brings an additional layer of trust, so to say. So you are not anymore curating 100% kind of the data that is coming in, but rather we need to just trust information that they are providing is correct, that it's fresh. But we are trying to choose the external data providers so that we can give them the trust and they have the authority to be the ones to give the data to us. And usually those parties are the ones that we already get the data from and use as is.
Mm-hmm. Are you using others than Tapi?
Not at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee a future where you could use, for example, if FSC opened up for an API directly to our database or to other certification-related inputs, could you see that that could be integrated in the future?
It would be really nice because, of course, there is a lead time. For example, if you provide something new, so there is a lead time if we need to manually go get it and update our systems, maybe update our kind of instructions and interpretations of that. So if we could just automatically get the freshest source, be able to trust it, so it would be a lot quicker to get it into use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the case, if we were to set up an API that gave all relevant advice notes, for example, for your product groups on how to interpret a standard, that could be relevant. But then if we then shift back to the whole drifting and hallucination, how do you make sure that it doesn't do that?
So of course, first off, RNIBot or any of these agents that we are currently talking of, they don't have online access. So they only have access to that data that is provided in their context. And well, of course, the large language models, they have their training data and their was, for example, one case that I was working before where the LLM was trained on some UPM public data and it did know a great deal about, for example, the saplings that we use. And I was wondering, how does it know? And then I realized, oh yeah, it's probably trained because we have this in upm.com. So it knew a lot and I was like, how does it know and why does it know? But it's providing the correct answer, so it's okay. But since then, we have iterated and tried to lock it even further down so that it's only answering based on the context that it gets from our curated systems and soon from the external systems that we trust. Then we do have this kind of evaluation and observability layer on top. So we have this human curated evaluation data that we use. So every time we change the prompt or add new data or do any other kind of major changes or on the RNIBot technical side, so we can run this evaluation through and see is it still performing on the level that we have set before on this evaluation data set. So are these cases still passing? We can have these failure cases that we have questions that it's not supposed to be able to answer. Is it still not able to supposed to answer those? So we do have this kind of regression check so that the quality stays at least on the same level that we have already built.
Mm-hmm. Will it tell the user, sorry, I don't know, if it doesn't know?
Yeah.
How do you evaluate over time? I mean, you now say when you change it, you will do regression tests on it. You will go back and see, does it actually still answer accurately? How do you evaluate the use from the users over time and improve over time? How do you make sure that it fits the needs on the ground, essentially?
Yeah. So of course, the evaluation is sort of offline. So you do it without the users. Luckily, we have a great deal of human input in that sense of that we have the good evaluation data set and it's evolving all the time because we find out cases and get user feedback so that we can iterate. But then the observability, it's then more on the kind of live system side. So there we have two approaches. So again, the MetsäHelp organization, they are kind of also checking what's happening under the hood of MetsäHelp and doing analytics in a sense that they can find, for example, knowledge gaps in our documentation that, hey, users are asking about topic A, but ArnieBot is not able to answer, even though we think we should have instructions on it. So do we have instructions or is it lacking? So then they can then write the instructions and increase the amount of documentation that we have so that the next time the user is asking from ArnieBot, it can answer. But then there is also this automated side of using kind of an LLM as a judge. So we can give them the kind of user question, then the answer that the ArnieBot gave to the user, all of the context that was retrieved to formulate that answer, and then ask another LLM model that, hey, does this answer the question that the user was asking? Is this answer helpful? Is it grounded in the context, or is it hallucinating? Is it coming up with facts, etc.? So you can do this kind of automated observability and then raise alerts based on any anomalies found there. Of course, that is reactive, but still you can find these cases. And if you do this live, you can also check this kind of when or before ArnieBot gives the answer to the user. But hey, actually, this contains hallucinations, and then the kind of LLM as a judge can say that, hey, actually do not give that answer because you're not certain enough in this, but rather say that, sorry, I don't know.
Wouldn't that slow down performance quite dramatically if you have to run it through a second LLM?
These are very fast systems. So we do have some delay, but not on a level that the user would really notice it. And the one key element is how you communicate to the user that the AI is doing something. So you can have this kind of writing, thinking, confirming, etc. So that usually, even though it might take 5 seconds, the user is actually happy with it because it sees that the AI is doing something. And then again, comparing to the previous experience of calling some Erkki or messaging some Timo and, hey, I need help with this, and then just staring at a blank screen or holding on the phone that, I don't know, I need to look things up, and it can take an hour, 3 hours, next day. So compared to that, 5 or 10 seconds, it's like instant.
You would rather wait the 60 seconds. Could you actually set the system up to also learn from other things, like learn from when you have your internal audits or your audit by your certification company and you get an audit report back? Would it be able to learn from performance data there and continuously improve the forest management practice in terms of, for example, saying, oh, we got a lot of corrective actions on this part of the standard. Let's focus on improving there.
I'm sure it could be done automatically as well, or have some kind of model fine-tuning based on these sorts of inputs. Mm-hmm. But the approach that we have taken now is more of focusing the human in the loop in exactly these kind of quality improvements. So if we find some incident or bug or users report that this answer, for example, is very bad, or as you said, the audit reports. So that is then the case where we want to get our kind of humans involved and improve our documentation and our internal systems. Because at the end of the day, even though we have ArnieBot, a lot of the people are still doing their work without ArnieBot using the same instructions. So we need to go to the source and fix that, because the same issue could happen or the same mistake could still happen even without ArnieBot. So we try to fix the source and make sure that the source is as good as possible and then build AI on top of that.
Mm-hmm. How many of your forest workers, for example, actually use ArnieBot? No.
400-ish users. Mm-hmm. And retention is, let's say, not perfect. There are users that are using it daily, some that are using it, let's say, weekly, and some that have tried it, but maybe haven't very kind of adopted it to their yeah. So maybe that is still communication and change management needed. But the users that have found ArnieBot and are using it often are kind of gradually using it even more and more and more because they find more use cases to it. But yeah, European Forest is one of those domains where change happens quite slowly, and they have their established work ways. So
it's the forestry sector. I would not expect anything else. How many users could you potentially have? Like, how many do you have in the forest that could be using it? Just to get a ratio.
So in the forest, it's that kind of 400 or 500-ish. But then we have, of course, our franchising entrepreneurs, then our external contractors, subcontractors. So theoretically, we could reach like 5,000 users. And then we still have the private forest owners in Finland that still very much use the same processes, just from the other side of the table, let's say. And they need the same information, maybe for a different use case, but still. So that has been an idea as well, that maybe in the future we could also publish something like Arniblocki to the forest owners. And that would mean like 300,000 potential users.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you just preempted my next question there, because I was just going to ask a follow-up question of, does it have different personas? And does it know who you actually are, whether you're a forest worker, whether you're a contractor, so that it replies in that kind of context?
Yeah. So for this kind of UPM internal franchising user, external subcontractor, it's prompted a bit differently, but it's not a separate persona. But the bots that are available to those user groups, they have different data contents, for example. So we don't give any UPM internal data to our subcontractors, for example, or how to work with customers, let's say. So that's internal data for internal people, but still the kind of behavior of Arniblocki for all of those user cases, it's the same, but the content is different.
What is it required to get to that stage where you're able to differentiate between the internal and the more semi-external users? What does that require of your data set?
For the data set, it only requires a metadata tag. So we have
you
this
say
kind
only.
Of. It's just one tag in the metadata. It's very simple. Mm. So you just.
I laugh because I know a lot of companies where just one meta tag is no small feat.
Luckily, the information management system that we have, even though it's hard to find information, etc., it has very good governance and metadata. So that side is good. So the data owners can do their work. And we have this kind of, let's call it zero trust policy for the data for the AI. So nothing is going there automatically, but rather it's always a kind of manual validation. And you need to add this metadata tag in order that the data or the piece of documentation goes to Arniblocki. So that tries to alleviate so that the data owner goes through their data. Is this good? Is this formulated well? And then they add the tag, and then it goes to Arniblocki. And then they might add a tag for external users. So then it's available for the subcontractors as well. So we have that side covered very nicely on our tools. And other than that, it's just an kind of corporate IT practice, and you have this single sign-on and role-based access control. So we know all the users that are using the systems. Of course, they're anonymized, but we know their identity. We know if they're external, internal, whatnot, and we can then kind of guide them to the correct data sources.
Mm-hmm. What kind of data insights do you have? Do you get stats from what they've been searching on? Or do you see these are the keywords that people have searched on so you can improve information on those areas?
We do have the chat histories. They are anonymized, so we can't identify anyone. All the personally identifiable information is also censored. So even if you ask Arniblocki who is responsible for land use in UPM, so if it is an internal user that is asking that question, they will get the information that, okay, it's this and that person. Mm-hmm. But that is then removed from the chat history so that it's not saved in the databases, etc. So it's not, or we are GDPR compliant in mm-hmm. that sense.
Yeah.
But we do have the chat histories, any feedback that is given to those chats, and we can do analytics based on those. So the case that I mentioned earlier, that we can find information gaps. We can find if users are frustrated with certain topics, if they are abandoning the chats at some point, if the answers that they're getting are not helpful for them. So we can do analytics on that data and improve the system over time.
Mm. Do you do that kind of language analysis to see, okay, now this guy is getting upset because it's not answering?
Yeah, we are not very far in that yet, but we are doing it. And right now it's been more kind of human-driven, but we are building systems to automate that and trying to have it more scalable, because we are having these agents and bots pop up here and there. So it's not scalable to do it only by humans. And we luckily in the European Forest have the MetsäLP team who are very keen on developing it, but we don't have the same privilege in other European businesses. So we need to do something more programmatic and scalable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm very interested in learning about what you're doing in other teams. But before we digress there, I'm just wondering, because I know you have both FSC certified, PEFC certified, non-certified forest areas. How does Arnibot distinguish between these different types of forests? Does it distinguish?
It does. I already alluded to this before the start, but it can ask clarifying questions, or the user can already say it quite loud in this FSC certified forest. But then usually what Arnibot defaults to is that as a kind of safety net, it always provides the relevant information for all these overlapping cases. So FSC, PEFC, non-certified. And it might highlight that, okay, you are most probably in FSC certificate because the question alludes so, but please do check, is this correct? And here is all the information you need in order to do the conclusion.
Mm. Okay, so again, if we go back to the forest and I'm now the forest worker, I'm in that forest, there's a stream, and I'm saying, remind me again what the buffer zones are connected to a stream. What would it typically then return to me?
If you have formulated just as you said, it would give the buffer zones for all of the certified forest and non-certified, and most probably all the different types of water bodies. And if you say that what is the buffer zone in FSC, so it might give a list of all the different water bodies in FSC.
So if I didn't say FSC, would it then come back and say, for FSC, it's this, for these types of water bodies, for PFC, it's this, in the Finnish forestry law, it's this, for the non-certified areas, please check whether which type you're in.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that is really interesting, but we also already clarified that it can't say, well, it looks like you're in a certified forest. Would you consider doing that in the future? Making it able to say, it looks like you're in a certified forest?
Could be. I don't know how much value it would bring additionally, because I think we still would want to have the safety net that the user is provided enough information so that the user is the one that takes the action and makes the final interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be quite a lot of work. So we would need to figure out different devices, how they get their location or get some technical implementation. So I don't think we will go there, but I'm not also that kind of business owner in anything. So if they come up with clever use cases and there is a quite easy way to implement it, why not? And we could still have the safety net of it providing more information and the human making the action.
You also alluded to other business units being interested in working with AI and agents. Do you have other bots coming up or agents coming up beyond Arnibot and UPM?
Yeah, metric ton of them. So
okay. Please do tell.
Yeah, I'm working the UPM AI Center of Excellence. So we are catering to all business areas in UPM. So pulp, adhesive materials, forest, energy, biochemicals, whatnot. There's so many. I can't even name them all. But yes, everyone is screaming, give me AI, let's do this, let's do that. And we have this kind of AI program where all sorts of AI projects are ongoing. Some are just internal work, some are just trying to streamline processes, some are trying to make our sourcing more efficient, whatnot. So
Which one is your favorite that you can talk about?
Arnabot is my favorite because I've been working so hands-on with it. So it's my baby.
Okay. Well, second favorite then. Where do you see opportunity in the future?
From my background, I'm still very keen on any European forest related because you can see it so practically what it means. And if we are trying to, let's say, optimize some yields or try to predict what sort of yields we get from a certain piece of land, etc. So it's so concrete. And then you go walk in the forest and you can see, hey, this is the one tree that I saw in the data and it looks quite like the data. So that's, of course, to me, very interesting. And I like the UPM forest projects.
Uh-huh. Is there any data sources that you would just dream of having your hands on that would make your life easier that you don't have right now?
So, for example, in Finland, we do these laser scannings, and we have this laser scanning data of pretty much all of our forests. But the accuracy of that, it's quite nice for the kind of stand level analytics, etc. But now there are these use cases where you use a drone to do the scanning on much more local area, so you can kind of actually see individual trees and small saplings and whatnot. So if we could get drone scannings of all the forests in Finland, I think we could do whatever we want with the data. We would know every tree.
What would that make you able to do that you can't do today?
So, of course, we could predict already before doing any cuttings that what we will get out of a piece of land or what kind of pulp or timber we could produce out of that. So then, of course, we could try to focus our operations where it is most efficient, and we could maybe find new forests that we can leave untouched, and it's not efficient or optimal to use this. So let's protect these and let's try to expand these protection zones and let's focus our efforts here and there.
And how far are you from, if you had that drone, would you then be able to do that? Or do you need other things than just that drone shot of every single forest? I know it's not a just, but...
We could get there and we can already do a lot of things. But of course, the kind of more accurate data that you get from the source, the better you can then track the end results. And then that applies to everything. So if we are, for example, the laser scanning data, it's giving averages per tree species per stand. So it's very averaged out. And if you go to a forest, there's all sorts of trees there and all sorts of noise. And then you do the harvesting that gives some noise as well. So having more accurate information, it would be really nice. And one thing that is also very interesting data is the harvesting data that you get from the harvesting machines. So when you cut a tree, you get the location and what kind of logs you cut from there, what's the volume, what's the length, diameter, etc. So that's very interesting data. And
don't you have that already?
We do have it, yeah. But it's kind of very interesting to use that sort of data. When you get to that granular level that you have millions and millions of rows of data, and what can I do with this?
It must be a lovely sandbox if you're you. If I zoom out a bit and then look at the role of AI in forestry in the future, if you look 5-10 years ahead, what will the role of AI be if we look 5-10 years ahead? Are they still assistants? Do you think they will become more like an auditor type? Are they decision making? Something else? What do you think they will be in 5-10 years?
I think that assistants will still be one role and kind of enhancing the human capabilities, let's say. So for an individual, for example, if you're in the forest and you would have some extended reality glasses and you could just see that I'm looking now down the stream and it could highlight potential risky areas, some good water crossing spots, etc. It would just make life so much easier.
Mm-hmm. You could add it to the helmet.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if that's just an assistant. Maybe it's a decision support maker. But I think that the assistants and decision support tools will still be very, very relevant in 5-10 years for individuals, for forest owners, let's say. They could get even better recommendations on how to maintain their forests, how to do timely tendings, etc. So just assist the human getting more from what they have. Forestry companies, of course, identifying the valuable stands where to focus their efforts? And if I'm already going here, what else should I do when I have my machine here that it's most efficient use? Because there is always a fixed cost transporting stuff to a middle of nowhere. So kind of trying to map out good logistical chains, where the value is, and is it worthwhile of my time going there right now, or should I wait, let's say, 2 years?
Could you see a role also where it would help guide in, if you wait 2 years, this is what it would do for the biodiversity of that area, or if you take that route, you've not gone across something that could be valuable from a biodiversity perspective?
Mm. Yeah, why not? If you can map out these risky areas, or especially in the protection use case, I think that's one of the most valuable use cases of this data, and identifying those early. And as you said, wait 2 years and it will become more and more valuable. So trying to simulate that somehow as early as possible would be really nice.
Okay, one final question. If there's one thing that you would like for the listeners to really understand about the use of AI in responsible forest management, what would that be?
From a point of a forestry company, I want to believe that any effort or time that we save by using AI in our operations is then used for customer relationships, customer work, getting to know the forest better, kind of in practice, going there out in the field and kind of seeing what is actually there. And just maintaining the forest better by AI-guided systems, by having just more time to focus on the kind of out-in-the-field work and not having to fill some forms 8 hours a day just because you need to do these trades right now.
So it sounds like use it as a support tool, but not a decision-making tool, and freeing up time to do better forest management.
Exactly. Trying to automate the kind of tedious processes that take most of our jobs, days, and then focusing our efforts on what actually brings value and not just the processes or filling something or using system A or system B.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is very true. Thank you very much for your time, Jonas. That was very enlightening for me.
Yeah, thank you. It was so nice to be here.
That's it. That brings us to the end of this episode of Forest for the Future. Artificial intelligence is often surrounded by both excitement and a bit of concern. What today's conversation hopefully made clear is that the real question isn't whether AI will enter forestry or not, but it's about how we design it, how we govern it, and how we align it with responsible management. And maybe it can help us free up time from tedious procedures and inputting information to do more responsible forest management in the actual forest. That's what we're all here for, isn't it? A big thank you to Jonas from UPM for taking us inside the developments of ArniBot and for sharing the opportunities and the complexities of bringing AI into forest operations. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe to Forest of the Future wherever you get your podcasts. You can also always reach out to me with comments or suggestions for future episodes on podcast@fsc.org. I am Laura Dalgard-Worm, and this was Forest for the Future.